I'd like to call to order this regularly scheduled meeting of the Irvine Planning Commission for September 19th, 2019, and ask the secretary to please call the roll.
Chair Nerschel is absent tonight. Commissioner Noland?
Present.
Commissioner Wong?
Here.
Chair Pro Tem Pearson?
Present.
Vice Chair Smith?
Here.
The record will show that we have a quorum.
Thank you. We'll move to the Pledge of Allegiance. I've asked Commissioner Pearson to lead. If you're able, please stand. The Pledge of Allegiance will be followed by a moment of silence.
Please repeat after me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. Mr. Garrick, any introductions this evening?
No introductions, Chair.
Any additions or deletions to the agenda?
No, sir.
That moves us to public comments. Public comments are an opportunity to address the commission regarding items that are not on tonight's agenda. We ask you to limit your time to 3 minutes on these. We have two requests to speak. The first, Susan Sayer.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Susan Sayer, and I've lived in Irvine for decades. During the last Planning Commission meeting, I was appalled to learn that the current policy is that traffic evaluation reports are not submitted to the Transportation Commission for approval. Given the current and future traffic circulation issues facing residents of Irvine, I believe that all development projects that require a traffic study or traffic evaluation need to be approved by the Transportation Commission. Is that not why the Traffic Commission was established? Shouldn't the Planning Commission require input from the Traffic Commission in order to approve a project? Traffic Commission meetings are often canceled due to the lack of agenda items. And take a look, there is nothing but a receive and file item on their next agenda. Why bypass the Transportation Commission? Is the commission going to be phased out? On your October 3rd agenda, you will have three tract maps on the agenda for approval, one for the construction of 94 residents, another for 277 single-family residences, and one for Lifetime Fitness Center with a private road in Great Park neighborhoods, which replaces the plans for a commercial center and food court that was to serve the local community. This luxury fitness center and private road will be located at the intersection of Irvine Boulevard and Cultivate. It is located about 1,500 feet from the artist site, which is near the old Broadcom location, which was sold to Five Points, which plans to build a City of Hope Center, a nonprofit which will be tax exempt and most probably non-income producing. I expect that it, along with the Great Park venues, will create a substantial amount of traffic. During a meeting with City Council staff this Tuesday, I was informed that a traffic evaluation for the Great Park Neighborhoods Project was completed, but according to current policy, it will not be going to the Transportation Commission for approval. From the staff reports, it appears that the other tract map applications and traffic evaluations were also not submitted to the Transportation Commission. There has been and will likely continue to be a substantial amount of controversy regarding Irvine traffic circulation. Given the great weight given to Planning Commission decisions, planning commissioners should have the benefit of input and approval from the Transportation Commission and other relevant commissions on all development projects. I hope that the Planning Commission can find a way to change the city's current policy and thereby require Transportation Commission approval of all traffic studies and evaluations. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Just as a quick point of clarification, at the last meeting, I was the commissioner who brought up the issue of the Transportation Commission review, And we actually asked staff to begin changing the policy so that anything that has a traffic impact, regardless of whether or not it's shown to go to Transportation Commission, we've asked that it actually do go to Transportation Commission to get a review. Next, Steve Lynch.
Good evening. Vice Chair Smith, I don't know whether you remember me, but I'll refresh your memory. About a year ago, I came in and was going to buy the house next to you.
Yes.
Okay.
And he didn't.
Boy, and aren't you lucky that you didn't?
Yes, I am. I was convinced that the other house was a better buy. I'm here to support code enforcement. There is no code enforcement. It's a joke. If you remember, basically, someone moved in next door to me and turned a two-bedroom condo into a four-bedroom boarding house or dormitory, like I called it. It's still going on. They code enforcement asked the owner at that time to make changes, to put it back the way it was. He was out of town, couldn't make the meeting, kept on postponing it. So they fined him, eventually, fined him. So then he sold it to a relative. And now the process starts all over again. There's so many holes in your enforcement rules, and code enforcement does not have the authority or the power to make a change. The building is illegal, or no permits at all. They got one permit to make three minor changes in the bathroom, change faucets and a drain. They ended up tearing a hole in the wall, moving a window, putting a hole in the roof, and again, code enforcement, there's nothing they can do. It's a sleight of hand that they you know, in transferring it to their relative, and again, code enforcement starts from step one again. This is a boarding house. They now have keypad locks on each bedroom door. So it's not a family, it's not kids living together. It's each individual room has a coded lock on the door. I would like, if possible, that you make mandatory with your permits that they get HOA approval before they can bring the permit to you. We know what's going on in our neighborhood, and a lot of the neighborhoods are being converted to multi-roomed boarding houses across from UCI. So I would appreciate anything you could do that way. And again, you can look into my case and find out that it's just stalled because code enforcement has no power. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Lynch. Although we can't get in dialogue this, I'll be asking staff about this later on. Is there anyone else who would like to address the commission under public comments at this point? If so, please come forward. And if not, we'll move on to public hearings. Item number one, would staff please introduce that?
Thank you, Chair Smith. This is a sign program for a freeway technology park to add one freeway-oriented pylon sign. And Tiffany Lynn, Associate Planner, will provide the staff report on this.
I'll open the public hearing and receive the staff report.
Thank you and good evening, Vice Chair Smith and members of the Planning Commission. I am Tiffany Lynn, an Associate Planner with the Community Development Department. And the item before you this evening is a sign program with administrative relief for Freeway Technology Park in Planning Area 32. The project site is located adjacent to the I-5 freeway along Technology Drive between Laguna Canyon Road and Barranca Parkway. The property is surrounded by office development to the north, east, and south beyond the I-5 freeway, and to the west is an existing vacant property. The site includes an existing 20-acre development that includes office, warehouse, research and development, and manufacturing uses spread across 10 one- and two-story buildings. In 1995, the zoning administrator approved the Irvine Spectrum sign program for office industrial properties, and this sign program includes various properties in different planning areas within Irvine Spectrum. The subject property has been included as a property within the sign program since its initial adoption in 1995 and has been subject to its sign criteria since. The sign program includes wall, ground, and temporary signs. The current proposed sign program will be independent of the existing sign program and proposes two sign types. Sign type A is a freeway pylon sign that is proposed adjacent to the I-5 freeway on the northbound side. The proposed sign will allow for one double-sided freeway-oriented sign, and the pylon sign will be 40 feet high and 20 feet wide, which includes letters and symbols that will be 48 and 60 inches high, respectively. The sign will identify the project site as well as tenants and will include internal illumination for the sign copy. Administrative relief has been requested to increase the sign height, width, and area, as well as to increase the letter and symbol heights. Additionally, administrative relief is also requested to identify additional tenants and to allow for tenant symbols as well as the Irvine Spectrum symbol. The applicant has prepared renderings to show the proposed sign. Here is a view of the sign going northbound on the I-5 freeway. Here's another view of the sign from a distance going southbound. The second sign type included within the sign program includes sign criteria for decorative construction fencing. This sign type is a standard sign type that has been included in most centers within Irvine and provides for sign criteria for temporary decorative construction fencing. The sign will be applied to the face of construction fencing and will be a maximum of 8 feet tall and will extend the entire length of the fence. No administrative relief is requested for this sign. The applicant has prepared this map, which depicts all previously approved freeway-oriented signs. As shown in this map, freeway-oriented signs are located throughout the city along the 5, 405, and the 133. Historically, similar signage has been granted for sites of a similar size to the subject property. In summary, the proposed sign program includes one new freeway-oriented 40-foot-tall monument sign and decorative construction fence standards, and all other signage for the site will continue to be captured by the existing Irvine Spectrum Office and Industrial Property sign program. Sign type A requests administrative relief, which is supportable due to existing signage that is similar and that has been approved in the past, as well as the size of the overall site. The sign design is supportable as it is consistent with the existing sign program approved for the site, as well as with other freeway-oriented signage that has been approved throughout the city. The proposed sign also provides for adequate site identification for vehicles traveling at high speed along the major freeway. With that, staff would like to recommend the Planning Commission adopt the attached resolution approving the sign program with administrative relief for Freeway Technology Park. This concludes staff's presentation, and the applicant and I are available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I don't see anybody on the board here requesting to speak. Is there anyone in the audience who'd like to address the commission on this item? Mr. Davis?
Thank you, Vice Chair Smith. I need to figure out how to work the machine a little bit better. Jeff Davis here on behalf of the Irvine Company this evening. I'm just here to answer any questions.
Great, thank you very much. With that, we'll turn to commissioners. Questions or comments, commissioners? Commissioner Noland.
I think the sign is a nice looking sign. I just wanted to just point out on the applicant's, one of your exhibits that shows all the signs. I think that's a great exhibit that really kind of shows the city in terms of how many freeway signs are located. Along the freeway and the height and all that. There is one, Lakeshore Towers. I believe the Planning Commission approved an additional sign. So there's two Lakeshore Tower signs now along the 405 freeway. There's two 30-foot signs. And the only reason I know is I drove the freeway because, you know.
That's correct.
Yeah, so it's a great exhibit if you want to just update that. But no, I that's the only comment I have, and I, like I said, I think it's a nice looking sign, so thank you.
Commissioners? There you go. Commissioner Pearson. It didn't pop on the screen.
You know, I'm a very strong proponent of having adequate signage while you're traveling at high rates of speed.
So I do
believe that the signage criteria that is being proposed should be looked at closely. I have a question as it relates to the square footage of the sign. What other signs along the freeway are 800 square feet? I think that's what the number is. I guess the question could be also looked at as, are we deviating from the precedent that we've already set in approving the freeway frontage signing?
So staff does not have an exact idea of whether or not there are other signages that are exactly the same amount of square footage as this sign, which is 720 square feet, but there are previously approved signs that are similar in height and width. Right here in this backup slide right here, we have several signs that have already been approved within the city. And the first one shown on the left is Spectrum Terrace that was approved this year by the Planning Commission. It is 40 feet high and it is 16 feet wide. So in terms of width, that sign was a little more narrow. However, because of the longer name of this project site, we decided to propose, or the applicant has proposed for the sign to be 20 feet in width rather than the 16. But as you can see in this exhibit, the Irvine Tower sign is also 35 feet tall, and several signs for Park Place along the 405 are also similar in height to the current proposed sign.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Pearson, actually, just to expand upon that a little bit, so what we did as a part of this, noting all the other previous approvals, we actually went through and sort of worked out the math. So what we're looking at is basically 1 square foot of sign area per 1,000 square feet of use on a site, excuse me, and then 1 sign per 25 acres of site area is the average. So this sign is consistent with both of those standards.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. That's my comments.
Very good. Commissioner Wong.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Mr. Davis, just a quick question. This is kind of my pet peeve, and perhaps you know this already. I just want to make sure the signage does not cause glare as you drive along the freeway. So can you talk a little bit about the materials you're going to use on the signage?
I don't have the exact materials in off the top of my head. However, we have been cognizant of that and do want to minimize the reflective nature. Of course, internally, they're lit at night. But the materials would not be highly reflective.
Okay, thank you.
I just had one quick question, and whoever can answer it. Do we have an estimate on the duration of time that the decorative fence is going to be up?
The decorative construction fence, it's a standard sign type that is actually included in many of the centers within Irvine. So many of the existing sign programs we have include this sign type. I can defer that question to the applicant in terms of if there is going to be upcoming construction. Staff is not aware of any construction at this time, but there are a few existing signs that the city has. For example, this is Lakeside Plaza, mm-hmm. And we have decorative construction fence standards for these various properties within Irvine, but the applicant can speak more on any upcoming construction projects in the future.
Okay, thank you.
The overall construction project will be a couple of years in duration, but the area that's being screened by this fence, probably about 6 months is all the need for that sign would be.
Very good. Just one quick comment to my fellow commissioners. I too had some concerns about the size of the sign, so I went out and drove the area. And this is located very close to the freeway flyover between the 133 and the 5. And so as a result, while it may seem bigger than what we normally approve, it's definitely within scale of the area, and the freeway overpasses and such are going to dwarf this in size. So it seems to appropriate in scale to its surroundings. Any further comments or questions? If not, I'll close a public hearing and entertain a motion. Well, I will go ahead then and move resolution 19-3754 as shown in the staff report. Is there a second?
I will second it.
A motion was made by the temporary chair and seconded by Commissioner Pearson. Any discussion on the motion? Please vote.
Motion passes 4-0.
Thank you. That moves us to item number two. Would staff please introduce this?
Thank you, Chair Smith. This is a consideration of two development agreements located in the Irvine Business Complex, one for the Elements Project and the other one for 15 Degrees South. And Stacy Tran, Senior Planner, will provide the staff report on this.
Just if I may, before we open the public hearing and receive staff report, just a quick question, and perhaps maybe for the city attorney or Mr. Garrick, one of the two. Do we consider these two resolutions as one item, or because they apply to different developments, do we have to hear them and vote on them separately?
You'll need to vote on them separately. If you'd like to hear them together, that could be within the commission's discretion.
I don't see, unless the commission has any objections, I don't see any problem with hearing them concurrently.
No, so. I don't.
Okay, then I will go ahead and open the public hearing and we'll receive the staff report.
Good evening, Vice Chair Smith and members of the Planning Commission. The item before you tonight is consideration of two development agreements requested by the owners of approved residential projects known as Elements and 15 Degrees South, located in the Irvine Business Complex. Development agreements provide flexibility beyond basic zoning compliance. Both property owners are requesting to extend existing entitlements beyond the 6 years allowed by the city's zoning ordinance. The city can request public benefits in exchange for entering into a development agreement. Agreement terms are discussed and tentatively agreed upon during the negotiation process. City Council makes the final determination on development agreements based upon the recommendation by the Planning Commission. On April 23rd, the City Council established a Development Agreement Negotiating Committee comprised of Mayor Pro Tem Anthony Kuo and Councilmember Melissa Fox to negotiate terms on behalf of the city. Separate meetings with the property owners occurred on May 24th and June 13th between the committee, city manager, and community development department staff. Since then, the committee and both property owners have reached mutual agreements on the potential terms and conditions for each development agreement. Before I introduce the development agreement terms, I will provide a brief summary of each project. 15 Degrees South is located at the northeast corner of Main Street and Cartwright, shown here in red. The entitlements were granted in January 2018. The project consists of a 150-unit multifamily project on a 3.73-acre site. Existing development on the property includes a 149,000-square-foot office building that will remain and a 45,000-square-foot data center that will be demolished and replaced with the residential project, which is shown in red. The property owner, J&R Main Street LLC, is requesting 17-year extension for the 15 Degrees South project approval to year 2036. The development agreement terms include extended affordability for four very low-income affordable units from 55 to 99 years, advanced payment of $2.8 million development impact fees paid in 10 years, and project improvements for an enhanced public walkway connecting Main Street to the property's accessory retail and common area. Additionally, the developer will provide city with a list of subcontractors working on the project that will be updated every 6 months during the entire course of the project construction. The second residential project is Elements, located north of Campus Drive between Jamboree Road and Bardeen, shown here in red. Initial entitlements for the project were granted in 2014 and 2015. The 23-acre site is a mixed-use development consisting of 1,600 residential units, up to 22,000 square feet of resident-serving retail, and up to 17,000 square feet of restaurant retail uses. Of the 1,600 approved units, 700 units are permitted and currently under construction, which is shown here in black. Elements One Leasehold LLC requests a 10-year extension for the Elements project approval to year 2029. Development agreement terms include advance payment of $17 million development impact fees paid over 5 years, and project improvements which include designated areas for valet and rideshare pickup drop-off, an enlarged dog park with Wi-Fi enhanced seating areas, and an Irvine Gateway monument sign and enhanced landscaping at the corner of Jamboree Road and Campus Drive. They too also will be providing a subcontractor list similar to 15 Degrees South. The total public benefit to the city should the development agreements be approved is $5.7 million. For 15 Degrees South, the total public benefit is valued at $4.6 million for advance fees plus the affordable housing extension, which equates to approximately $31,000 per unit and $271,000 per year. For Elements, the value is $1.1 million for advancement of fees, which equates to over $1,200 per unit and $110,000 per year. Again, the negotiating committee and the property owners of 15 Degrees South and Elements have reached mutual agreements on the development agreements. Therefore, staff recommends the Planning Commission recommend to the City Council approval of both development agreements. This concludes my presentation. The property owners, staff are available to answer any questions that you have. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your report. I see we have one speaker for this from the public, Tim Strader.
Good evening, Vice Chair Smith and members of the Planning Commission. I'm Tim Strader with Starpoint Ventures, representing both applicants tonight, Garden Communities and J&R Group. Would first like to thank staff for all their work on this. As Stacy mentioned, this was highly negotiated. We had multiple meetings with the City Council negotiating staff, as well as the City Manager, the Director of Community Development, and other community development staff. So this went back and forth multiple times with proposals, counterproposals, and both applicants are happy with the result that we have tonight. Just as a quick bit of color to what Stacy had already mentioned, she did mention that a entitlement is valid for 6 years, but the way it works, as you know, is a CUP or master plan is valid for 3 years, and then it's at the discretion of the community or the director of community development to grant that additional 3-year extension for the total of 6. So in the case of 15 Degrees South, we're within that 3-year period, but rather than waiting for the potential extension, it made sense to do this development agreement tonight, primarily because the tenant that's occupying the data center, which is the location for the development, has options to renew their lease that go well beyond that 6-year period. That's why the 17 years was the agreed upon term that gets J&R through the potential extensions of the data center tenant. With regard to Elements, 10 years will be sufficient to build the remainder of the project. Phase one is already up and tenants are in there currently. Phase two is close to the completion of the plan check submittal and will be starting construction. And so it's really phase three that would be built beyond the expiration of the 6 years. What wasn't mentioned in the public benefit list is the fact that Garden Communities, with the master plan approval, agreed to spend approximately $4 million to underground the power lines along Jamboree, which was deemed to be a public benefit at the time, but outside of the terms of a development agreement. It was really something that they offered to do for the city. So between that, between the provision of public parks, which are the only public parks in the IBC, those are additional benefits to the Elements project. So both property owners are here, and if you have any further questions, we're happy to respond. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Tim. Real quick, David, my screen is still on the voting screen is still on the prior item, so I can't see who's requesting to speak. If you could clear that for me.
There's no more speakers.
There are no more speakers. I was just going to ask if anybody would care to address us, but seeing none, we'll move to commissioners. Commissioner, questions or comments?
Yes, thank you very much. I'm questioning the when did the benefits start flowing to the city from the negotiation of this development agreement?
For the advancement of fees, they will be due 90 days after the effective date of the development agreement.
Okay, so that's the trigger point.
First payment, correct.
After the council approves it, and then a period of time, and then it triggers the start of the benefits to the city.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Wong.
Thank you, Vice Chair Smith. I have to admit, when I initially read the document at the request of 10 years and 17 years, looks very, very extremely long. After the explanation of the fact there are existing building currently underneath at the site, I understand why that was requested. And I also understand this is a highly negotiated between the city and the developers themselves. And this project also adds to the city in terms of the affordable housing units. So I think that's a very wise move on the part of the city. Just quick question, Tim, for you, if I may. And staff, if you can turn back to the site map, which was shown for the Elements project. Did you mention there's a public park on site for the Elements?
That's correct. The you see where it says on the left side, under construction, 700 DUs, just to the right of that, the green space?
Okay.
That'll be public.
Okay, I understand park spaces and open spaces are much needed in IBC. So once again, the city did its due diligence in negotiating with the partners, and thank you for all your effort.
Thank you.
Commissioner Nolan, I have one minor concern here. Just to set this up properly, there was a subcommittee of the council that negotiated this. We are hearing it, and then it's going to go back to the full council. So the full council has not seen this yet. And my concern after speaking to staff is on the six-month reporting period for the subcontractors. What essentially is going to happen with that requirement is it's going to put a burden on our staff to monitor and actually chase down, if necessary, either the developer or the general contractor to get a list of his subs. And if that target is missed, potentially the contractor or the developer is going to be responsible for a fine equal to the amount of the permit. So if the permit is $10,000 or $25,000, they're going to be stuck paying that because they missed a filing deadline. I know there's some fudge factor built into that, but it seems like an awfully burdensome requirement to me. And in talking with the city attorney, this is a slight change from what's in the existing city code.
Mm-hmm.
And my recommendation would be when we get to making motions on the resolutions, is that we recommend to the city council that they just revert to existing city code for reporting to the subcontractors so it's not too oversome a burden for both the developer and for our staff, because the staff is going to have to track it. Any other questions or comments on this?
What does our city code require?
That's a good question. Commissioner Nolan asked about the difference between the the code and what is part of both of these development agreements. If the city attorney could address that real quickly.
So both the city code and the development agreement require disclosure of subcontractors. The city code requires it when permits are issued, and the development agreement would require it every 6 months of the term of the development agreement. Otherwise, it's more or less identical. There is, like Commissioner or Vice Chair Smith mentioned, some wiggle room built in. There's potential cure periods if there was a good reason for missing the deadline, but that's effectively the difference.
Again, I just think it's because it goes over and above our existing code, I think it's a burden on both our staff and the applicant. And I would recommend that we just stick with the existing city code. Any other comments or questions? If not, I'll close the public hearing and voting on the resolution separately. I will move resolution 19-3744 on the Elements Project with a recommendation that the City Council adopt the standard code for subcontractor reporting.
I'll second that.
Motion made by the Chair and seconded by Commissioner Pearson. Is there any discussion? Please vote.
I have a question.
I just have a quick question.
If I want to vote in favor of the development agreement as is, then do I vote no for your motion?
Well, I tell you what, so you don't have to vote no on that. Why don't...
I'd like to vote yes on the development.
As a maker of the motion, I'll bifurcate... Is it okay that I bifurcate this and we vote on the resolution without any... with the exception of the six-month term and then vote on the six-month reporting separately? Is that okay?
You can do that. You do need a second, though.
Yeah, I was going to ask the seconder of the motion if that would be that, okay.
That's fine with me. I do have a question, though. If the DA is mirroring code, what exactly will the additional resolution do other than do exactly what we're doing? I'm not quite sure if code says every 6 months.
It doesn't.
It doesn't.
No, and that was the problem.
Thank
was the
you.
Problem.
Now I understand. I misunderstood.
Okay, so we'll be voting on resolution 19-3744, less the portion about the reporting. So on the that portion, please vote.
Commissioner Smith, is yours coming through?
There, now it does.
Motion passes 4-0.
Okay, the second part of that was the motion on the reporting requirement. My motion was to change from 6 months to the standard code as it exists. Any discussion on that motion?
I think it's appropriate, Mr. Chairman, or Vice Chairman.
All right, please vote. Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner.
I just want to make sure. Staff, do you feel that with this new requirement or the change that if we kept it the way it was, do you feel that it would be a hardship on you in terms of meeting this six-month requirement? And I mean, I don't want to put an undue burden on staff, however, I'm thinking that there is a reason why the negotiating committee put this in.
Commissioner Nolan, it will put some additional responsibility on staff to track it, no doubt. Without it, from a staff perspective, we could go either way. We're comfortable with the 6 month, or if the commission's recommendation is to revert back to code, we're comfortable with that as well.
And what about the applicant? Is this something that's the 6 month, is that doable, or is that something that every 6 months you're going to have to be running around and maybe paying a fine?
Certainly, we don't want to pay fines.
Sure.
And so the intention would be to do it whenever it's required. Obviously, less often is better, but it's not a big deal to do it every 6 months if that's important to the city council. So whichever way you go, we're fine with that and can let the council make the decision.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Further discussion? Commissioner Pearson.
I do have a question to either staff or the city attorney. Was this element part of the negotiation, the quid pro quo, in establishing the business points of the development agreement? How was this initiated?
It was one of the items that was put forth on the table as a term of the DA, yes, by the subcommittee.
So the subcommittee, including the council members involved, determined that this was a business point of the DA.
It was discussed in those meetings. There was no formal vote or action taken, so it was put forth as part of those meetings in that discussion, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Just as a point of clarification of my motion, we are acting just as a recommending body, so obviously the council will do what they see fit, and their word is law. As an individual who's just giving advice, that would have been my advice. So any other discussion? If not, please vote.
Commissioner Smith, is yours pushed?
I had pushed it.
Motion fails 2-2 with Commissioners Noland and Wong dissenting.
Okay, if that's the case, then I'm assuming, Madam City Attorney, then someone will need to make a motion to adopt the terms that was negotiated by the subcommittee for this particular item. Is that correct?
Well, you already have a recommendation going to council from your last motion that they approve the DA. And so it's
not necessary then?
It's not necessary.
Okay, that's very good. I just wanted to make sure we're dotting all the I's and crossing all the T's. Okay, so then the resolution 19-3744 will go to council as negotiated. I'll entertain a motion then on resolution 19-3745 for 15 degrees. Is there a motion?
I'll make the motion.
Commissioner Wong makes a motion.
I will make the motion to adopt the resolution number 19-3745.
I'll second that.
The motion's made by Commissioner Wong and seconded by Commissioner Pearson. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, please vote.
Motion passes 4-0.
That concludes the public hearings and moves us to staff reports. Any staff reports this evening?
No staff reports.
Any planning commission reports?
Just one quick comment. OC Register recognized City of Irvine as the best city to live here in Orange County. I want to take this opportunity to thank the people who worked in this building, the city staff, for maintaining our high standard of living. It's really up to these dedicated men and women who serves the city, the residents, to why we ended up as the number one as the best city to live here in Orange County, California.
Gee, and they didn't recognize their outstanding planning commission?
I would recognize Commissioner Smith because he has the longest tenure on here, but I have only been here less than a year, so I don't want to recognize myself.
Any other planning commission reports? If not, we'll adjourn to the next regularly scheduled meeting, which I believe is October 3rd. Oh, I'm sorry, Commissioner Noland.
Right, here I go again.
I'm still not popping up here.
This is just a side note, just with the, I've been on this planning commission just a short time, but since I've been here, there's been a couple freeway sign programs that have come before us. And when I wanted to dovetail on Commissioner Pearson's concern that just the scale, and because our existing sign program in terms of how the city addresses freeway signs. Every freeway sign I feel that comes as an application, will have to have some type of administrative relief, because I feel like what our existing sign ordinance allows, it's not big enough. And so my concern going forward is that every new sign is going to be a standard. And so I don't want to get bigger and bigger. So I'm not sure. Tim, I don't know if you want to address
would
that.
You,
would
you
like... I don't know if I'm asking for a revising the sign program, but what can we do to not use existing signs, freeway signs, as our standard, and then getting bigger and bigger? And is there something that maybe we could do or staff can do to
I know, standard? In the past, this commission, when approving larger signs, has imposed some language in the resolutions indicating that it's that what they're approving is not precedent-setting or indicative of how they would react to or approve signs in the future. That's one path forward. The challenge in amending the sign ordinance is, for these types of signs, one size doesn't fit all necessarily. So even if you come up with a larger size, there's always going to be something that might be a little bit different. There's a challenge to that standpoint. We can explore it a little bit more offline with you if you'd like.
Okay, that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay. Any other reports?
You know, I'll add to that. You know, we're looking at the freeway signage, the monument signage, that is both an advertisement and a public safety item. And I'm wondering if we should take that sign and try to create a precedent that we'd be happy with in area, height. You know, we're now 8 feet by 40 feet, you know, and Commissioner Smith did identify that, you know, in the magnitude of where this one sets that we approved today is appropriate. But should we, you know, now we continue to look at freeway signage, and if this is going to be something that is going to be looked at in the future, maybe we should at least look at what type of precedent should we set to where it doesn't become, you know, a time-consuming discussion every time it comes up.
As a option, staff could bring back a presentation on this topic for, you know, bring back some ideas around what you just mentioned and get commission input as to whether or not you want to explore some type of code amendment that would capture your thoughts?
I would think perhaps a study session that would highlight some of the pros and cons so we could, as an agendized item, discuss it would be valuable. One of the things that I think is a positive about the way we approach things, and we can take that into consideration in the study session, is that we get to discuss every one.
Right.
And one of the things is, I think the positive of that is everybody's input is then considered, and stuff doesn't kind of sneak through, you know, without having our eyes on it and without being able to approve it. But I think it's worthy of a lot more discussion. So bringing it back as a study session would be a worthwhile thing to do, I think.
Yeah, we can do that.
Very good. Thank you. Anything else? If not, it's October 3rd, I believe, is our next scheduled meeting. We are in adjournment.